Well, good afternoon, everybody. How are you doing? I want to commend you on what wonderful Catholics you are. You filled from the back first. I'm Michael Shalasi, and I'm the Director of Development and Stewardship for the Archdiocese of Galveston-Houston. I'll be your moderator today. And I want to make sure that you're all in the right session, session 66, right? Okay. Well, we're going to get started, as we do, with prayer. And so on page 3 or on your Hoover app, we'll get started in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities. And may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. All right. Well, without further ado, I just wanted to welcome our speaker today, Dan Hupka. And Dan likes to help people connect with the idea of how to make something possible, to leave a legacy. He's worked in this field for over 25 years. Wait,
25 years in both profit and nonprofit and for-profit.
Nonprofit and for-profit. The other side we don't want to talk about. Anyway, as vice president for partnerships and growth for money for ministry, he gets to show nonprofits and others the possibilities of planned giving. That's what we're here for today. He's a native of Grand Rapids. He is a diehard Cubby fan, which I'm glad my Astros are no longer in the National League. He's married to his wife, Melissa, and the father of three fantastic young adults. So, without further ado, I'll turn it over to Dan.
Wonderful. Thank you so much all for being here. I know it's the first session after lunch, so I do have one request, that you ask your neighbor before you lay your head on their shoulders. Other than that, do what you have to do. Again, my name is Dan Hupka from Money for Ministry. Just a quick background on Money for Ministry. Our founder's name was Mike Bowalda. And Mike's first job out of college was as a development director for a small school. And they told him, we need you to raise about $50,000 through an event. And Mike, being Mike, got right to it and said, yes, I can do that. And you know the amount of hours that go into events and what that takes. And through a lot of effort, Mike achieved his goal. And he was sitting down next to his superintendent of the school, going over what that had just happened. And Mike noticed another line item on the budget for just over $50,000. And Mike said, what's that? He said, that's a planned gift that just came in. And Mike said, what did we do to get that? And he said, nothing. And Mike said, we need to do more of those. And that really began the journey of Mike and the beginning of Money for Ministry. He wanted to learn what were the characteristics that drove somebody to leave that kind of gift. Why would somebody decide to count an organization as family? And that began his career journey to growing planned giving, and to creating money for ministry. My colleague Doug Baus is here as well. Doug is our Vice President for Client Services. My role at Money for Ministry is twofold. I introduce what we do to new partners, and I lead our data and analytics side of the world as well. So that's what we do. So Money for Ministry itself is a planned giving growth, marketing, and consultant organization. So we don't write estate plans. It's not what we do. We don't create wills. We don't create estates. We make those types of folks busy. And so that's what we want to do, is we want to help donors think about what their legacy might look like and how it can impact those who they currently love and support. So just a couple quick things about Money for Ministry, and then we'll get into how you can be helped, whether it's through Money for Ministry or not. We want to make sure that you're being impacted by what's possible. So the mission at Money for Ministry is very simple. It's just more estate gifts for Christian nonprofits. We want organizations that are doing good things to continue to be able to do good things and to maximize your potential within this growing area of giving. Our vision, then, is really big. It looks like a simple vision, but it's very, very big. We want to make sure that first, that every family has an up-to-date estate plan. They can't leave you an estate gift if they don't have an estate plan. First and foremost, we have to make sure that the donors are taken care of. And then we want them to consider leaving those organizations they know and love, that have been part of their lives for years and want to be part of it for years to come. They're considering those. And through this type of giving, organizations that are doing amazing things have a sustainable future through the largest wealth transfer that's underway now. Let's a little bit about Money for Ministry. So today, the things that we're going to be talking about, one, we're going to talk about the case for planned giving. Why do this? Why is this a focus? What's the big deal? Setting goals. What does that look like? How do we grow? How do we do this? How do I talk to donors about legacy giving? What does that look like? How do I identify those who are most interested in this type of gift? How do you get those folks to take action? And who's my planned giving team? What does that look like? And then we'll have some time for questions and answers. And Doug will help me out there for sure. And with that, we'll get going with things. So the case for planned giving. How many of you have heard about the Great Wealth Transfer? Not a huge secret anymore. Do we really understand and can we wrap our minds around how much money this really is? Over the next 20 years, there's estimated of $85 trillion that are going to change hands from one generation to the next. Is your organization ready to receive this kind of giving, and what does that impact look like to make sure that they're included? And what does $1 trillion or $85 trillion even look like? Well, if you could spend $10 million a day, sounds pretty amazing, right? If you could spend $10 million a day, it would take 23,171 years to spend $85 trillion. This is huge. This is the money that's changing hands from one generation to the next. We have not experienced anything like this in our lifetime, and there's nobody in this room who's old enough or young enough to have experienced it or likely going to experience it again. This is a significant time in life. So, and for those who are more visual, if you stacked $100 bills, ground up, $85 trillion would get you to the International Space Station 225 times. Again, this is a lot of money we're talking about here that's being transferred down from one generation to the next. And did you know, currently, depending on the source, average estate gift is about $57,000 per year. And oftentimes it's coming from the unexpected places. This is a major gift. How many of you think that if you got a gift for $57,000, would you think it's a major gift? Probably all of us, right? These are often coming from people you don't expect. These are we refer to them as your hidden major donors, those long-time faithful givers who love what you do, who are part of your work, who are the fabric of your work. And sometimes it's coming from major donors too. I was talking to an organization a couple years ago, and they said to us, our average estate gift is $150,000. And I had to say to them, oh, you think that's a good thing? It's not. What it's told me is, you've done an okay job of talking to your major and mid-major donors, but you've completely ignored those folks who are giving small amounts, who have been giving to you for years and years and years, and the largest gift that they're ever going to give to you is their estate gift. It could be those $15 a week givers. They want to be part of this journey too. How do we talk to those folks to make sure that they're appropriately invited into the story so that they can experience this type of gift? And so you're maximizing the potential within your file, because that's what we want to do, is maximize what's possible for you. So getting it right down to that average is actually really important, because you're getting more dollars in versus having a higher average and missing out on people who love what you do. This is an interesting quote. This is from Jim Langley, who's a expert in fundraising. He said the great wealth transfer will not be a tide that washes across the entire shore of the nonprofit world. It will flow into and greatly enrich select inlets, most especially those that have nurtured deep donor relationships, shown where targeted investments can create programs and services of increasing relevance to future generations, and engineered ways for causes and purposes to be perpetuated and their impact extended over time. Again, it's not about now. It's about the future and creating the right vision for the future and connecting your donors to it. It's about nurturing deep donor relationships. It's not about a transaction. A planned gift is not transactional. It is emotional. It's trust built. Again, these are folks who are counting you as family. They're giving you money for when they're not here anymore. So it's appropriate to make sure that those donors have a nurtured relationship. So that's the case for planned giving and why we want to focus on it. The opportunity is significant, and walking the donor through the appropriate journey takes some time and effort and intentionality to it. So next, setting goals and defining success. Why do we have to do this? What's interesting, I've been at Money for Ministry for almost 8 years. I came from the for-profit sector, and goals were part of what I did, driving toward goals, understanding what success looked like. And so when I joined the nonprofit world, it was really interesting for me to hear everybody I talked to say, we should be doing more with planned giving. And not a single one of them could articulate to me what success looked like or what they thought was possible. And without knowing what's possible, how do you build a plan to get there? There's more resources available in our donor files than we may even realize, but we have to understand what that's like so we can build the plan to get there. So a goal is incredibly important because it's what keeps us on task, and it's also what keeps planned giving off of, let's put it on next year's strategy. It's oftentimes that thing that gets kicked down the road. Well, we've seen the dollars tell us we should no longer do that. Let's make sure we're paying attention there. So why do we need to set a goal? We've tracked this over a few years with organizations, those who have had goals in the past, those who haven't, those who we've worked with to help them achieve goals. Well, those who had a growth goal within 5 years grew their legacy pipeline by 133%. Those who didn't have goals with intention going behind planned giving grew by 27%. Goals keep us on task. They bring the aspirational down into reach. We want to make sure we're doing that. So that's why we need to have a goal. Okay, well, it's great to have a goal, but how do we do that? What are some possible goals that are out there for us? One of the things that Money for Ministry can help people with is help identify what's possible within your file. We're happy to do those kind of things, but we're also happy to help you articulate what a good goal might be for your organization. So I've just got some sample goals, some things that you might want to consider as what could be a goal for our organization. What would it look like for you all to have 10% of your annual income come through planned giving? How much of a difference could that make in your community and the work that you're doing? Well, right now, last year and the years before, roughly 10% of all gifts given to charities were bequests received. So if you're not at 10%, that might be the gap that's the opportunity for you to achieve. How do we get there? Let's make sure we're driving toward that kind of goal. So that's one potential. Checking on an annual basis, how close is our revenue toward that 10% number? What would it look like if 5% of our donors committed to be legacy donors? Again, ways to look at how's your file breakdown, because we know, we've seen at Money for Ministry the impact that really roughly based on organizational type, you can really expect somewhere between 5 to 10% of your donor base to become planned givers. And again, a planned gift is going to be the biggest gift that donor is ever going to leave. The average estate gift is generally, on average, equal to about 10 times the amount of that giver's lifetime giving. So it's a gift we don't want to miss out on. So getting 5 to 10% of your donors to that amount is a really good place to go. What if you, last year you got 10 known new estate givers have told you, hey, we've left this gift for you. What would it look like for the next year? What if we did 25? Let's make that a goal. How do we invest in people to get to that on an annual basis? What would that look like, and how can we nurture those relationships? We have a legacy society. What would it look like in 5 years if we doubled the number of people within the legacy society? You're here to tell you that that is absolutely possible. We see it happen all the time. Organizations come to us and they say, we've got 150 people in a legacy society, and they've done well, but there's potential to do so much more. They've been able to double that amount within 5 years. It really is possible with the right effort. Some people just want to connect with those known legacy givers at a deeper level. Have the opportunity to nurture those relationships, just connect at deeper levels. And that's an effective thing as well, because who doesn't want to connect deeper with somebody who has said, your mission is so important to us that we have dedicated this portion to you? When you connect at a deeper level with those donors, there's evidence that on average, those donors who leave a legacy gift for an organization, their current giving, right now dollars, goes up by an average of 77%. Once somebody leaves you in their estate plan and you know about it, you build that relationship, their current giving is going to go up as well. So one way to grow current giving, focus on future giving. And when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because donors like organizations that have an eye on the future of this is what we're working toward together and you're part of it. Current giving goes up as well. And sometimes what you want to do is just, we want to grow the amount of people who we can talk to about this subject. What is it like to do that? We want to just grow the number of legacy giving prospects. How do I grow that? How do I normalize plan giving within our world? That's what we want to do. So there's different types of ways to look about setting a goal. Maybe there's one on there. You go, oh, that feels right for us as an organization. Or maybe it spurs something else. Oh, no, I think this might be right for us. The big deal, though, is to have a goal, because that's where growth happens. So, but you can't just have a goal. Having a goal is great, but you have to have the plan that's going to support it. And part of that is knowing what the journey of a legacy giver looks like. So every single legacy giver is on the exact same journey. They're just at different places on it. And the journey is pretty simple. It's awareness, interest, action. And if you were to say, Dan, that's marketing 101, I would say, yeah, it is. Marketing 101 is awareness, interest, action. And you think about it, any product that you've ever come across, you have to become aware of it first, figure out how does it impact my life, that's interest then, and then do I make a purchase? Difference with planned giving is we're never, ever, ever trying to sell a concept. That would be all wrong. It's not a sales piece. So awareness, interest, action in planned giving. Awareness is when your donors are thinking beyond today. They're starting to say things like, you know, I want to see this organization that I know and love grow and do more work. They're saying things like, I need to have my own plans up to date. I don't have an estate plan. I need to do that. That's getting them thinking about tomorrow. That's awareness. That's a really important first step. Interest is when they're farther down the path and they're starting to consider what a good type of gift might be for them. And then action is when they've done it. They said, we've done it, we want to let you know. And then it's a time to celebrate that relationship in a different way. A big mistake that we often see organizations make is missing out on the biggest piece of this journey, and that's the awareness piece. Oftentimes, we see this all the time, organizations come to us and say, we're ready to grow our planned giving. We're going to have a planned giving website. We're going to talk about charitable gift annuities and donor advice funds and QCDs. We're going to talk about all these things. Well, by doing that, by having that as your first focus, what you're doing really is you're assuming your donors are already interested. And you've missed out on that awareness piece. So you're really talking about 3% of your donors versus a much wider percentage of your donor base. So backing up a step, introducing that is critically important. So the order of the message matters. Instead of leading with those points of interest, instead we say lead with inspiration. What connected you to the organization in the first place? Think about planned giving. We often refer to it as an act of worship. We are called to give back. It's our need to give back. It's an intimate act of worship. It is not a transaction, so we should never make it transactional. Storytelling. So much better to lead with story. If you ever want to put somebody to sleep, hand them an article about here's the five latest trends on charitable gift annuities. Nobody's going to read that. But if you start talking about all of the things that the organization is doing and the things that we're going to do for years to come, and then once you get to the point of them understanding the things that you're going to do, and then you introduce tools that can help, then that's going to translate in a much different way. Finding out what matters most to the donors. That's novel, right? We want to know what matters most. If we're going to ask about gifts in the future, we need to know what their aspirations are and how they see themselves fitting into the future as well. And then positive peer pressure. What do I mean by that? That's really, again, normalizing planned giving. Many people are giving to us this way. Is it something you might be interested in as well? It's not this out-of-the-box, scary thing. Planned giving is not a conversation about death. It just isn't. It's a conversation about your donor's life, their love of what you do, their legacy. And so that's how we want to focus it, really normalize the subject. So lead with inspiration, follow with information. Don't start with the information, you follow with it. So what do I mean by that? Once people are inspired and thinking about this type of giving, then you talk about the ways to give. We want to certainly make sure your donors are making wise financial choices. No, nobody wants them to make foolish choices, but you don't want to lead with it. Just like on a, if you're doing an annual appeal, the headline is not going to be, we've got new ways for you to give through credit cards. That would never be your lead story. You would lead with inspiration and then follow with how you can do it. Same thing with planned giving, but for some reason, the temptation is to lead with a tool that's out there. We want to not do that. And then you can also, here's some resources to consider. As organizations, you have connections, and here's some things you can think about, and that's time to bring in those more formal tools that are out there for donors to use. Here's a real-life sample of how to think about things. And yeah, I did throw a picture of a car up there. What does that mean? Well, about 30-plus years ago, the way that car advertisements happened completely changed. No longer were car companies talking about the inner workings of the vehicle. Instead, there were stories of adventures of families going on things together. There's adventures, there's growth, there's travel, there's time together. They changed the narrative, and that brought car sales up in a significant way. And so nobody now is talking about the latest fuel injector as a selling point. The closest they'll get is they'll talk about horsepower and they'll talk about miles per gallon. Why? Because they know that some people, they want to go fast, and they know some people want to be conservative to the planet, but it's all about their individual stories. It's not about the tools of the car. So it's about those donors and those people who are making purchases, seeing themselves within the story here. Same type of thing. Let the donors see themselves in your journey as well. Have it be aspirational so they can understand their place within your story.
Dan, can I just speak to that? Because I think this part is such a huge piece of what we see in folks who are trying to communicate about gifts in the will, planned gifts, is, and as you've already said, talk about the tools first. But as you think about your parish, you think about your diocese, you think about the organization that you represent, there's so much. You can, those long-time, loyal, faithful parishioners who've been part of it for decades, their heart, their life, their faith is so connected to what you do. And what makes a gift in the will a legacy gift, so the storytelling, this find out what matters most, this is an act of worship, it becomes a way to leave a legacy. It becomes a way to pass on your values. It becomes about my kids, they love the faith, or my kids, they don't love the faith. And there's a part of me that really aches for that. How do I tap into that sense of values, of legacy, of faith? The gift in the will is perhaps the last act of generosity that your family will ever hear from you after you're gone. And so for donors to consider that as they're considering how much they love the church, I think there's just so much here that we work with organizations of all types, but when you're in the church itself specifically, there's such a deep-rooted connectedness. And if you lead with that, you will find donors ready to talk about this.
Yep. for sure. And that's actually a good segue to our next slide. And this is a free resource we'll provide. There's a link to this resource as well in the Whova app if you don't have time to hit the QR code. But this is a resource we have called an ethical will, sometimes referred to as a legacy love letter. It's not a legal thing, but it's one way for an individual to pass on their values to the next generation, talk about all those points in life that have shaped who they are, the organizations that have shaped who they are, and really hand that down to the next generation. Because one thing that we see when people who are starting to consider their legacy, one of the things that they want to do is they want to pass their values and what they've learned down to that next generation. And this kind of outlines different ways that you can express that. So something that you might want to think about downloading, again, free from us to use. Like I said, if you don't have time for it here on Whova, there's some links within the session for that. All right. Identifying your most interested supporters. How do we know who's interested in the topic? Well, I do know that the first time you meet somebody, don't ask them if they want to leave a planned gift. That's probably not the way that you want to do it, and I'm sure that you all know that. But how do I identify those who might be interested? There's some simple formulas you can use. This is just one that we throw out there as a way to look at this, is we want to look at those longtime faithful givers is really what we're looking at, and we refer to it internally and as a simple 12-12-12 method. Do a query in your database of people who have been with you for 12 plus years, with 12 plus gifts on file, who have given a gift in the last 12 months. That's not a magic formula or anything, but it does get to the heart of what we're looking for, which is longevity, length on file, depth of connection, and recency of giving as well. Those three indicators are going to be good for you in terms of finding those donors. So just worth looking and seeing how many people do we have who maybe fit those types of profiles.
I think you can up in the parish level.
Yep.
It's going to be 12, 112.
Right.
Because
sure.
They're giving weekly or monthly, right?
Yep, for sure.
And that just makes it all the better.
Yeah. And that's next point is those monthly givers or weekly givers, people who have just part of the fabric of your work. Again, it's not about the amount that they're giving on an individual basis. It's that they are that engaged. That's really worthwhile. Consistent volunteers. This one gets overlooked a lot, and it's really interesting. So we have data that shows that donors who volunteer on a regular basis are 5 times more likely to leave a legacy gift than non-volunteers. That stands to reason, right? Not only are you important to them from a financial standpoint, they're giving their time to you as well. So just make sure that you're, again, normalizing the subject in front of volunteers as well. This one's interesting. People who love to share your work. What does that mean? One of the simple questions that we ask through a get-to-know-you type of process with donors, we ask a simple question of how likely are you to share our work or how willing are you to share our work with others? 1 to 5. 5 being really very, very willing. Those who say that they're very willing, and by the way, about 30 to 40% of your donors will say we're very willing to share your work with others. Those folks are 3 to 5 times more likely to leave a legacy gift than others. And it makes sense when you think about it, right? Because these are people who are willing to be your ambassadors, talk about you. And so it's important to make sure that, again, we're inviting those folks into the conversation, normalizing the subject. What about high net worth donors, major or mid-major donors? Should we talk to them? Yes, but only if they meet the other criteria first. Just because somebody has means doesn't mean that they are going to bless you with them. Now, there's all kinds of data, and people have said to me, Dan, there's data that suggests that people who have more money are more likely to leave a legacy gift. And I say, yeah, you're right. But they don't leave it to you unless they meet that depth of connection first. It's not just about how much money they have, it's how much love they have for you. So they still need to meet those criteria in general. There are exceptions, but when we're looking for most likely, this is what we're doing here, that's what we want to do. Some data points to consider, date of first gift, date of last gift, so we're looking for people who have given for a long time and continue to give. The total number of gifts, again, tells us about faithfulness, which is what we're looking for, those loyal, faithful givers. Special segments like board members, volunteers, things like that. And then inbound activity. Those are the people who check in on you and or who ask about what's coming up next and are interested in what you're doing. Those folks, they're interested for a reason. They love what you do. Let's make sure that we can appropriately introduce things to them as well. Getting to know your donors. What's important when it comes to legacy giving about getting to know your donors? Well, we think there's a couple things. First, the person. What about the person? Tell me how they first connected with us as an organization. How did they first come to know us and their work? Get to know them. Was there someone or something that mattered to them that led them to a relationship with you? We want to know those things because even though we're talking about future gifts, that beginning point is a critical first step in that journey. Their passion. So person, passion. What do we mean by passion? Which parts of your work are they most interested in? What is it about what you do that lights them up in a way that they want to be part of your journey? What would you like us to see us invest more of our resources in? A beautiful place to grow planned giving is when you have your donors visioning on your behalf. What a wonderful thing that is, because planned giving is about future dollars. Getting your donors thinking about the future, critically important step. So their person, passion, and then preferences. How do you prefer to be part of our work? Knowing those things is critical. Do you like to be volunteers? Do you like to, do you enjoy monthly giving? Do you enjoy being prayer partners, mentors, however they might interact with folks? We want to know those things because, again, it tells us depth of connection. Again, that's what we're looking for, loyal, faithful, depth of connection. Have you ever considered becoming a volunteer, a board member, committee member, those types of things? Because people who say yes to that aren't there because of guilt. As much as we want to think it's because of guilt, they're not helping you because of guilt. It's because they love what you do and they want to be part of it. So those things, again, tell us depth of connection. So getting to know your donors. This little word diagram up there is just a reminder to you all of what are the characteristics of a legacy giver. Okay. Money for Ministry has hundreds of thousands of donor responses on this particular subject. We know the ins and outs of the characteristics of a legacy donor. We can tell you things like a volunteer is 4 to 5 times more likely to leave a legacy gift based on type of organization you are. People who don't have kids, their resources are going to go somewhere. Going to organizations that are doing such wonderful things. Very much an option. Those longtime faithful givers, event attenders, people who go to events, they're legacy prospects. So when you meet people and you're talking to them and you find out this is somebody who goes to events and they've been volunteering with us and they're on a monthly giving program, run, don't walk to a conversation with them because they're likely very good legacy prospect because they love what you do because they're involved in all these different ways. So that's what we want to look for. And getting donors to take action in planned giving can be tricky, but we have to know what to look for. And 95% of all legacy gifts or the act of creating an estate plan, of creating a will, they're triggered by major life events. Those big points in time that let us know things are changing. People don't just change or update or build an estate plan on a random Tuesday after grocery shopping. It's not how it works. It's something major has happened in their life. It could be a birth, grandbaby, could be a wedding, could be graduations, major job change, major travel plans, unexpected hospital stays, deaths of loved ones. Those big points in life, we can all just sit for a minute and think of those snapshots in our lives. We know what they are. And those are the things that catapult us forward toward making sure that we have an updated plan in place. The reason we highlight that is as fundraisers, we are usually blind to when those life events are going to happen to folks. We don't know when somebody's major life event is going to happen, which is why it's, again, critical to make sure we have consistent messaging, consistent communication about planned giving. Because we don't know when it's going to happen. And when that happens and the estate plans are updated, we want to make sure that those organizations that that donor knows and loves remains top of mind so they go, oh, yes, I've been meaning to include this organization in my plans, and they'd go ahead and do it. So that's why we want to make sure that that happens. And again, it's part of normalizing planned giving, just another way to give, but it's a timing issue too. So make sure there's good, consistent messaging. And then we often talk about, early on the slide, early on one of the earlier slides, we talked about not selling to your donors as a concept and that awareness, interest, action spectrum. We want to serve your donors. So what does that look like? Thanking them for their gifts, informing them about big opportunities and things and changings, inspiring them, offering to pray for them, pray with them, be invested in their lives because they're invested in yours. That's how relationships work. So however you would want to be invested in, make sure we're bringing it back to them too. And a reminder, this one is big. Your donors aren't giving to you. They're giving through you. And that changes the paradigm. You want to offer the opportunity for them to continue this work that needs to be done through you as a mechanism to greater cause in the wider world as part of God's kingdom. So they're giving through you, not to you. Couple of other free resources that are available to you. One, again, ways to market. So again, good, consistent conversations with donors. I'm sure you all know that August is Make-A-Will Month. I always wear my Make-A-Will Month t-shirts and fly my Make-A-Will Month flag at home. But in case you don't and your donors aren't, here's a good resource to provide for your teams, different ways to promote planning and updating your wills. It's going to give you some strategies and some ways to communicate with your donors about that particular subject. Again, there's a link in this to within the Whova app to take you to it as well. Also on our webpage, you can reach this as well.
How many people know August is National Make-A-Will Month? Raise your hand.
All right.
Okay, that's pretty good. A lot of times people are like, huh? That too.
Right. And in October, I don't have a resource up here for this, but October is, there's a State Plan Awareness Week in October. Another just banner holiday that, we all know so well. And the other one to consider, from a timing perspective is a QCD toolkit. So again, just another free resource. Interestingly enough, last year, Giving USA had a report that said organizations, nonprofits that promoted QCD gifts in any way received 50% more QCDs than those who didn't. And mind you, this is folks who promoted it in any way, not even saying that they did it well. Like, imagine what could happen if you're doing it really well. So this is a kit to help you walk through how do we talk about QCD and gifts of this nature for your donor base. Again, this resource is available on the Whova app as well.
I just say a word about the National Will Make-A-Will Month Toolkit, because one of the things that's really key to the thinking that we do as we try to help folks make this decision to include a ministry in their will is, what are some of the friction points in updating your will and getting your house in order, frankly. There's so many reasons not to do it. People think it costs a lot of money. People don't want to think about their death. They think it's going to be complicated. And this one, this came out of my own experience, but it's been validated by others. You go through, there's a lot of online will tools these days, right? And maybe you're familiar with some of these. And they'll say that you can update your will in 30 minutes or less. And I used one of these tools. It was a really good tool. It was a tool we helped the company put together. We gave some insight and input into it. And, it takes about 20 minutes if you know who you want to be the guardians of your children, and if you know who you want to be your personal representative or your, I'll stand up so if you can see me, personal representative, trustee of your estate. And it was interesting. I was doing a webinar last week with, some folks from a group called Giving Docs, and they said the number one friction point on their website was exactly that. People would go through the process, they'd get to this point of having to name a personal representative, name an executor, and they would abandon the process. And in their research, it had to do with, they said, well, if we change it from the title executor to personal representative, that was made it easier for people to go through the process. But I said to them, and we were talking about this for a little bit, I think the other thing that's going on in these situations is that that's a hard question. That's a really hard thing to think about, because now who's good enough to take care of my kids should my wife and I pass away? Well, frankly, nobody, right? I mean, this, if we're being honest with ourselves. Who's the person that I'm going to ask to be the executor of my estate? And, you got to have hard questions. You got to ask somebody, your brother, your uncle, your parents, your children. And a lot of times that causes people, it's a point of friction. So I say all that to say, these are the kind of the, some of the challenges you run into in trying to get folks to include you in their will. That, Make a Will Month toolkit, walks you through a whole series of questions, about that. So, how do I want to be remembered? What are the stories I want told about me after I pass away? What kind of values are important for me to communicate? And the idea is that if you've asked those questions of yourself, now who is you're going to be your personal representative could be an easier, question. It kind of primes you to be in that position to have that conversation. So hopefully, again, trying to remove some friction points. So I know we're trying to get to Q&A here, but I didn't know.
We're doing great.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Your planned giving team. We talk to a lot of folks who, like, who's on my team from planned giving standpoint? Do I have to be a planned giving expert? Do I have to know everything about planned giving? Yikes. Well, a couple things. One is you don't have to be an expert in the tools of planned giving to be an expert in growing planned giving for your organization. You have to be an expert in what's going on in your organization, in what the future holds, and how to message that. But we think it's probably best not to be the financial expert for your donors. We want to make sure that we're leading them the right way and then introducing the person who might help care for them from a financial standpoint when they're ready. So what does your planned giving team look like? I'm glad you asked. Oftentimes, people think, well, planned giving, that's development, right? And somebody in development, and maybe even it's that planned giving officer who we leave alone down there in the end of the hall, and they do all the work there, and they tell us about it when a gift comes in. It's not just development. Certainly, development has a big part of it. But it's not just development. Leadership. They're the ones who often have key relationships, who interact with boards, who set tone of the mission. They're often in that area. And again, a big part of legacy is trust. If there's not trust, there's likely not a gift. And nobody builds trust more than often than leadership. What about marketing and communications? Absolutely. In fact, if your marketing team is ever running short, or if your communications team is ever running short of stories about your work, ask somebody who's left a gift in will, who's decided to leave a gift in will, why they've done it. And you're going to hear some of the most impactful stories about your organization that you'll ever hear. Because oftentimes these are people who've experienced your work in profound ways. And they are playing back basically your mission because they've experienced it. And those are great stories to tell. And again, storytelling is part of what we're doing here. Donors, volunteers, ambassadors, board members, stakeholders, shareholders, like folks who are invested in different ways are willing to talk about your organization. Remember we talked about that group of people who are very willing to share. That's who these folks are, those brand ambassadors, those people who are willing to share your work with others. Community partners. If you've got partners in the community, there's all kinds of ways to come together to do events, to talk about this kind of subject. You can host legacy events as well and have good partnerships there. Speaking of events, we've yet to find a single event that couldn't and shouldn't also include an opportunity to have an information on planned giving given to it. If you're talking about financial giving, if you're talking about becoming a closer member of the community, there's no reason why you wouldn't also include planned giving in the subject. Again, it's about normalizing it. It is a way to give. It's something that other people do, that positive peer pressure. And then just the programming in general. We've been doing this work for years and for years to come, and if we want to see it continue, we want you to be part of this, and you can weave planned giving into that as well. And this is the only plug I give for Money for Ministry. When we work with organizations, we work as an extension of your team. We like to be seen as your planned giving back office. We're doing a lot of the deeper work so that you don't have to. But if you just follow some of the models that we gave here, we know that your planned giving is going to grow whether you work with us or not. We want you to be left with the right way to go about it, which is Again, that leading with inspiration, following with information, and really helping to normalize the process. I think there's a QR code up there. We do free consultations. Anybody wants to talk to us at a deeper level, that QR code will give you information on how to book some time with us. We're willing to do an assessment of your organization, what your plan giving potential might be. It's so funny. I'm head of sales, but I'm not a salesperson. I want you to be positioned to do your best work possible. So I'm very happy to have a conversation with anybody as needed. And you should come away with actionable items, whether or not Money for Ministry is part of that team or not. So don't feel like this is a click to any kind of high pressure piece, because it's not what we do. With that, I think that's my last informational slide. And are there any questions?
Hey, one thing is, if someone does ask a question, repeat it. So
yeah. Thank you.
I have a basic question.
Yeah.
Curious, because I've attended sample sessions, and I know that one of the things to look at, I think I've had any data as far as plan givers, percentage-wise, who have children or don't have children.
Yeah.
If there's any data to support that.
There's data to suggest that those donors who don't have children are very much more likely to leave a legacy gift. Yeah. Depending on organizational type, sometimes call it verticals, it differs from organizational type to others. But most the average is usually 3 to 5 times more likely to leave a legacy gift without children than with. And yeah, it stands to reason. There's some types of organizations where that's not the case, but most of them, significant data point. Sorry, and that question was on. No, he just reminded me. The question was: is there data on donors who have kids versus donors who don't have children?
I'll just add, you mentioned earlier, events and we say planned giving in a context like this, just because that's the term that, you know, the umbrella term for everything. But if you're familiar with the work of Russell James, he talks about the statistic, only 37% of people over age 30 know what the term planned giving is. So we often say, we either say leave a legacy or make a gift in your will. The story that I like to tell, it was a ministry in, Albany, New York, and they put a checkbox on a reply device for an event, and the checkbox went something along the lines of, I'm interested in learning more about planned giving. And so somebody checked the box, and they called them up, and they said, oh yeah, we plan to make a gift that day, which is just an example of the way that term gets misunderstood and misused. So, you know, I'm interested in learning about how to make a gift in my will. I'm interested in learning about how to leave a legacy, or I've already made a gift in my will. Those are some of the, I mean, just little things like that, little twists of phrases, changing of the language can make a huge difference. Again, we're talking about, you know, you can, you know, Dan talked about how the mid to major level donors tend to be where people focus their attention, but there's so much opportunity among the masses, and we don't want you to miss out on that.
You brought up Russell James and noted in your 12-12-12 formula, that's not always the case, especially in our parishes, because if someone hasn't given in the past 12 months, does it mean, because most people leave a gift in the past 5 years of their life, and we have parishioners who don't need to live anymore.
Yes.
So as a child's home in another state, but if you stay connected with them, they may not be in the offertory. So I wouldn't say that the last 12 applies.
That's a great comment. I'll just make sure for a recording standpoint. It's the 12-12-12 rule, with one of the 12s being a gift in the last 12 months. That rule we hold loosely, in the sense of, if you're looking for a place to start, how many people do I have right now who I can talk to about planned giving? We say, oh, let's do a 12-12-12 rule. But you're right. There's those longtime faithful givers who, for whatever reason, now their income has changed and they don't give with the same frequency. That is absolutely a group that you want to pay attention to as well. But there, we also want to be careful with those areas too, because those are those are donors who are connected. They may not have the resources right now. They may not even be doing their own finances. So that's where I would lean sometimes on that ethical will, that legacy love letter, and start with that particular group almost there, and then introduce legacy as a checkbox on there. It's a little bit softer way to go about asking. It flips it, and first we're caring for you. We're caring for your legacy because we know your current finances might not be able to carry you right now, but this is a way we can discuss your legacy and does it make sense for you to think about a future gift. But yes, I agree that we don't want to forget about those longtime faithful givers whose current giving has gone down a little bit. That's a good point.
And I would add, and I think you're probably referring to folks that are potentially nearing the end of their life, where again, as you said, they're not necessarily engaged in their finances. But we would say too, if you see that trend from a longtime loyal faithful giver, not only should you not discount them as a possible planned giver, but you would want to make sure that you not discount them as a parishioner in general. In other words, they're engaged. They may have left you in their will, and if you stop engaging them at any level, now you risk losing them. When they've already made you a commitment.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We never want any known legacy giver to end up on a lapsed communication list, because the odds then, if you stop communicating with that donor, the odds of you falling out of their plans go up significantly. And that's just tragic to see. So we want to make sure that doesn't happen as well. Yeah, great comment. And for the recording, that's a comment suggesting that the plan giving team also includes from the parish level to make sure that they're considering their partners in the diocese. Yes, in the back. I know of them. We have not worked very closely with them, so I can't speak into the effectiveness of their platform. I just haven't had a chance to dive that deep. I do know that partners such as My Catholic Will and Free Will and Giving Docs, those types of organizations are important, and our work leads to them. What we want to do is make organizations like that as busy as possible. But I've not had the chance to do any vetting specifically with My Catholic Well. But it's good to know about it from, it's a market reality. People are creating wills online. And so we do want to make sure that there's good, safe, vetted places for it. Yeah.
I had a question about the volunteers. You said that they're 4 to 5 times more likely to leave a legacy gift. Are these older volunteers that have maybe after retirement come to do things?
Yeah, it depends on organizational type, because there's like different types of organizations have different types of volunteers, but on average, those volunteers who are giving with their time versus their treasures, for sure. But we actually have had stories from clients that we work with who had donors who met each other volunteering at an organization, were married, and then that and their journeys followed all the way through there, and they've left gifts and will. Yeah.
One of the assumptions that often is made is that, you know, and we were working with a Catholic foundation on the West Coast, and they wanted to limit their prospects to anyone 65 and older. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, because clearly if you're thinking about, like, that's not a bad strategy, but it's not a complete strategy. So one of the things we see is that the average age for a first gift in the will would be age approximately 49. People are, you know, that's about the time that your kids maybe are starting to get out of the house, you're starting to see your income in a different way. You start to think about charities, the kind of legacy you want to leave. So we often want to caution against that. You know, I mean, there probably is a sweet spot from, say, 65 to 75 when you're, you know, competent enough, lucid enough to have those kind of conversations. But you certainly don't need to limit it to that.
Yeah. The window really is, the average last time a will is updated is about age 79. So that's an important thing to think about too. So if you don't start talking to folks until they're 65, you've shortened your window of conversation and connection. So that 49 to 79 just opens the window wider and is going to create a better pipeline, for the future as well.
Just to highlight too, because you said it, our legacy gifts are triggered by life events. And I think sometimes that's so, right? Giving Tuesday is the exact opposite of a legacy gift because you're looking for a gift that day because you want a new commercial fridge for the kitchen and whatever the goal is, new pews or whatever. But a legacy gift, it's on the donor's timeline. So you're constantly communicating. You're constantly raising awareness. You have to consider this an ongoing type of approach. And then when that life event happens, and then this gets back to the question about like online wills, all of those sites, we think they're all great tools. Again, we haven't vetted anyone in particular, but it's another way to reduce that friction. So I think there's just an opportunity there to, again, legacy gifts triggered by life events. You want to stay top of mind. It's an ongoing thing. It's not a one and done. You just keep that conversation going quarter by quarter, year by year.
I think we have time for another question or two, if there's any. Yeah.
Yeah. One, I want to thank you for the statistics because they're so empowering. Like how everyone of us should walk out of here and say, okay, we're going to start advertising for QCDs instantly.
Right.
Right.
Just making people aware. But the one I just want to get clarity on because I don't know if I wrote it down correctly. Connecting with legacy givers at a deeper level. You said current giving goes up. Did you say 77%?
77% on current giving, and that's a Russell James stat as well. He just recently updated that. We hosted him for a webinar this past January, and that was a stat he had just updated from there.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
If you want to get more Russell, the webinar is on our website and he did, he does for all kinds of organizations, but he is a Christian. He's a man of faith. And we said, what do you have that's kind of new and fresh? He's like, oh, I got this and it'll work for your audience because it's only for faith-based audiences. He talks all about, scripture, it's been 8-9 months now, so it's not top of mind for me, but he talks about a text in Timothy and how that like empowers people. It was so good.
It was really good.
I love it. Yeah.
There's no other questions, just a couple things. We're giving away a free legacy planning website. So we do have QR codes here that you can scan. We're going to give that away by the end of the day. So if you're interested, if your parish or diocese or wherever you're working, you need a legacy website. It doesn't have fancy plan giving calculators on it because we found that nobody uses those. What we do want the donor to find is their place on the journey. And the legacy planning site is intended to help the donor wherever they are in their journey on this. And so it's a free legacy website. Money for Ministries logo is not on the website at all. It would be your colors, your logos, everything. It would feel like it's part of your site. So that's free. It's a $4,800 annual value and you have it for life. That's our gift to one organization here this week. And there's other materials there. If anything is interest to you, grab them. Again, no pressure. Would love to talk to anybody who's interested.
Thank you.
Thank you.